Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, host of the Unscripted SEO Podcast. I'm here with Gus Pologia. Why don't you give yourself a quick introduction, tell us what your position is, and then we'll get started.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Gus Pologia. And even though you just said my name, I don't know any other way to start an introduction. Yes. Introduction. It's weird. People say it, you repeat it, but here we are. I work for Indeed, the job marketplace, and I've been there for nearly 3 years now. I work as a senior SEO product manager, and most of my time I'm spending with engineers, PMs, more than with my actual SEO team. And I think I found myself in SEO doing SEO and product. We're going to talk about this later, I would guess. Yeah, that's what I do now.
Yeah, no. So where did you start out in SEO? You know, because product manager, did you start out in the SEO side or start out on the product manager side? And like, which way did it cross over?
Yeah, career-wise, SEO. So I've been doing SEO for almost 13 years now and started where a lot of people start, on the content side. I was doing a lot of content at first. You know, first week on the job was here's the Moz SEO guide. Read it. And keyword research, on-page content. Then I did link building for many years. Got really bored of it. Wanted to work for an agency, moved to Ireland, and started doing SEO for all kinds of companies. So, you know, agency, you just get a bit of everything. A few months I would be crazy about local, a few months I would be crazy about digital PR, whatever my clients needed. And I would look in the room and say, there's not one person around me that really knows this to give me answers. I would just, you know, go deep 6 months. Everything I care about is local SEO, and I'm fixing different places on Google Maps and, you know, doing all the things that we do. And then maybe the client moves on to another agency or moves to work with someone else in the team. So now this client is all about leads. So it's like, okay, how does your leads work? And, you know, which CRM do you use? And then you just get crazy on that thing. And so, yeah, I would just keep jumping to different things.
That's a lot like my course, too. I started as a literal customer support representative at a hosting company. They kept asking, how do you rank on Google? And so I had to figure it out. So my first foray was the SEO book by Aaron Wall. And they said, read this. And so I did. And yeah, you kind of have to, like, I've worked in-house. I've worked at an agency. And agencies are always challenging because it's miles wide and inches deep at times. And other times, like, one client will be like, oh, you got like 20 hours to like deep dive and solve this SEO problem. I guess I'm becoming an expert in conversion tracking today. So I think it's good to like round out the skills. But now you've transitioned and you've brought yourself in-house. Was that did you seek that position? How did you come on board at Indeed and make the transition from full-out SEO to the product manager side? And what does that mean to be an SEO product manager?
Yeah, I realize that's kind of what you asked me in the first question. I answer a bunch of other things, but no, not good. What you asked for. So after a few years in agency, and I really wanted to work in the agency side and see all different scenarios, and I think I grew a lot in that sense, working with different clients, becoming a client manager as well, so understanding what the client really cares about. You know, they don't care about the canonical tags out of place or how fast this page is loading. They want to know, are we selling more? Are we getting the leads that we want? How are you going to do this? They absolutely do not care. It's like you, there's a plumbing problem in your house. All I want is to my house not to flood. If you're using a golden pipe or a plastic pipe, and whichever is the easiest, that'll make a smaller mess in my house. That's what they want. And once you learn this, you understand who you're talking to, you know what kind of detail to give it to them for them to be satisfied. It's not about hiding anything, but is more about what they really care about.
Yeah.
So I was an agency for a few years on that, and I got promoted at the agency a couple of times, and at one point they asked me to lead a team, but they didn't give me a raise, and I was really pissed at it. And I decided, you know what? I love this place. I love the people that I work with, and I was very proud to be there. But I thought it was not a nice move, what they did with me. And I opened myself to interviews. So I said, you know what? Interviews that come my way, I will consider them. And 2, 3 months later, I went in-house, and I had this idea ready to go in-house at some point. It's more manageable. You go deeper into the problems, and I feel like I can do more in-house than I could do in an agency. Of course, depends on the client, what they need and whatnot, but I'm much closer to the problem, and I feel like I develop solutions that I couldn't have done, at least on a company as big as Indeed, that I couldn't have done if I was an agency, pointing problems without knowing things deep down.
Yeah, I
To
definitely agree.
answer, yeah,
There's
go
kind of
ahead.
an aspect of it feels like riding an elephant, because I worked at TapClicks and Raven Tools as their in-house in a product manager role, and like there is a difference between how the organization views input from their in-house SEO representative and kind of a like there's. It's sometimes useful to have that agency relationship because you can kind of shift some of the blame if things don't go well on it. But there's also like it's weird. There's a balance of like trust and mistrust that goes along with it too. And you usually have like a main contact with the agency, and that person might not be the one that can pull all of the levers. But if you're hired in, you have a lot more sway in that. I guess there's a bit of more politics at play when you're in-house, and it's more about arguing for budget and attention, or budget and development time is really the biggest scrap, to try to get the attention of, like, are you competing with like this product's going live versus this page and this part of the site is going to be optimized.
Yeah, it is very different. Like I look at, I try to look at how life was in both ways, and in some cases I would do, I probably would be better off being the agency, because I would be in a work with a client that is a bit toxic, and you're like, how can some of these people be here all the time? Because it's so toxic to be here full time that I'm hoping you see some nice people even in a toxic environment, and he was like, I hope that he and she move out of this place. Anyway, to keep answering your question on the product side, when I joined Indeed, I was an SEO content manager, and after a couple of months, the person that I was doing the product work decided to leave, and my manager and his manager thought, hey, Gus, maybe he's a good person to take over this role. I was doing a lot of presentations at the time, the classic first month job. You do an audit, you look for opportunities, you put a couple of slides together. But I think what they saw was that I was good into explaining things in a simple way and selling the benefit of something. So I can't remember anything from the top of my head, but like we had maybe some long form content pages that I said, we should make this information, this page dynamic. We have this information in a different database because I've seen it, and this is just a no-brainer because no, this is not too complicated. We have all this information, we're just not using it in the right place. So they decided to give me this role from this person that was leaving, and I didn't really know until I was on the job how different my life would be. So I'm gonna give you a little rundown of how my day-to-day goes. Let's say we are starting a new quarter, and I'm gonna come up with three, four big ideas. These can this can be internal link ideas, it could be new page types, it could be different things that we want to do. And I will always start with a written document. What's the background on this? Why do you want to do? How long is it going to take? Do we have the resources? And you're kind of like pitching this on a Word document. It might be a 3-page or a 10-page document. It depends how much detail you need. And with this document, I can go back and forth to different people, and they'll say, I don't understand this, or I don't like that, or we already tried this. And I go with every champion on a different area. So I'm going to sit with someone from SEO. I'm going to sit with someone from UX. I'm going to sit with one of the engineers and say, we want to do all of this. I'm promising, in this document, I'm promising that engineering can do this, and it might take somewhere between 1 and 3 months.
Yeah.
And this is before we actually start building anything, right?
Yeah,
this is
absolutely.
To gather that feeling around.
Yeah,
and I think this works for two things. One, people know how much they will be involved, and the promises that you're putting that they will do something.
Yeah.
So you're essentially promising that to them, hey, Jeremy, you're going to do this. This is your part on this initiative. So if you tell me now that this is not possible or that what I'm saying is wrong, now is the time for you to say it, because you're going to be held responsible later for executing this. And second, you get people involved into an early stage. So once I go out and say to the whole team and say, hey, we're going to build this internal link module and it's going to do this and that, all the leaders already saw it and they already sold and they know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So they already like building up on it as well. Oh, I like this because of A, B, and C. And so that conversation is there. You have those PRDs or product requirement documents ready. And from there, you're going to start building things. So if I can write tickets myself, I start writing them. And over time, you learn certain technical elements that should be in there. And it becomes easier to write the technical things.
Yeah.
And in some other cases, it gets way too technical. I have no idea what is a MongoDB and how it connects to the cron job. And, you know, it gets to some areas that I like, oh, I know this is a piece of code that runs once a day. Mm-hmm. And it's going to update this other thing. That's enough for me.
Right.
But I can't write this ticket. So I'm going to sit with the engineers and they will break down all of these things into tickets that are activities that we need to do. And then we kind of go back and forth into how the execution is going. If I can validate results for those tickets, I start validating step by step.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of know what's going to happen this quarter, everything we're going to do. Those ideas have been researched and discussed with different people. So I spend more time, you know, helping with the project at this point and seeing, is this a good ticket? Does it explain exactly what we need to do? Did I put enough examples so the engineer knows exactly what to deliver? And then you start getting to all of these bits. But, you know, it's just developing this idea from the document into tickets, into executing the work.
And how do you communicate that up? What does the structure look like? Of like, it takes, you know, like a whole quarter to, you know, develop the spec, talk to people, get it broken into tickets, start those tickets, and then you get it launched. What's the post-launch process like? How do you make sure that you have that, you know, sense of success of like giving kudos to people that participated, but also like, hey, you just invested a bunch of the company's time and money. So what's your process of monitoring outcomes from that at the big scales?
Yeah, I have a little story for that because it's something that happened with me and really, really touched me at the time. I was maybe 6 months now on the product role, and I was doing a big presentation to a leader in the company to say, oh, we did this thing, and look, Traffic doubled since I started, and of course, it's the work of a lot of people, not just those things that I worked on. But I was happy to say, we did a lot of traditional SEO things that usually have a good impact. So she saw me, heard me presenting for 15 minutes, and then she just looked back at me and said, "How do you know any of these things are happening because of the things we did? Maybe traffic was going up anyway. Maybe the demand for these jobs is up. This would happen regardless of what you did. I have no proof that the work you actually that you did is actually what is driving this growth." And it's just like the floor opened and I just fell down and I'm like, maybe I'm gonna lose all my engineers. Maybe all I did was nothing. I became really self-conscious of, I was very proud in the morning and I was on the ground a few hours later. And talking with different people in the company, I learned that other teams were doing a lot of SEO A/B testing. So I started working with the team that we have that has the capabilities to do this. And then I could really pinpoint this, the impact of those things that I did. And then I could go back and say, this was 3% of our traffic increase. This was 5% of our conversions increase. And then it was a completely different conversation, because there were no more, all of these things you do in SEO, they contribute to growth. It was very specific. This growth only happened because of this thing. And then I started A/B testing, SEO A/B testing everything that I could, because you'll go back to that conversation. I can go to another team and say, oh, we want to do another internal link play that is going to be different than the one we did before. But with internal linking, we can get a growth up to 10% incremental. So then, you don't need to keep explaining why links are important and how Google views them and the crawling that happens between pages and the anchors. A lot of people don't care about any of this. They care. I've done this, gave us a 10% lift. I have another similar play to do. Oh, 10% lift? Yes, I do want a 10% lift. How much is it going to cost? And then the conversation becomes much simpler when you can come with business reasons and numbers, instead of all the technical things that we love. But looking from outside, it really only matters to us.
How does in the in that environment, what are some ways that you have had to learn and adapt the C-suite language, the language of your managers, OKRs, like what type of things have you had to adapt to be able to communicate and manage expectations? Because there is that piece of not just did your thing, did your change cause the thing? Like you can explain that through A/B testing. How do you speak to C-suite who might have more of a mindset of, hey, give me your prediction for growth on organic over the next 6 months based off of the campaign that you want to do? And how do you leaven that with reality, or do you avoid that pit trap altogether? What's your strategy for communicating to that level of business that looks at success with metrics and eyes that are different from rankings and traffic?
Yeah, I think I learned a lot from. I have a manager, Sam Brennan, and he's really good into simplifying these conversations. So sometimes I would write a PRD that has 10 pages, and unless you're involved with building this, you don't care about those 10 pages. And he would make this into a one pager, and get to a higher level and say, hey, you would find a much simpler way to explain those things. And so I started doing the same. Here's the document. We're explaining everything in detail. you may look into it, you may not look into it, or if you have a few questions, I can answer because I did all the research, so I'm covering my ass. But I think often it's just keeping it very short. You have all the research to back up.
Yeah.
People will look into maybe a 10 slides presentation, and each initiative it's one or two slides. So you need to simplify for the people that don't have time, right? They are looking to the SEO thing, the PPC thing, the branding, the radio. They're just looking to too many things, and they sign off into all these different things. So one is building that trust. And once I started doing A/B testing, I could put numbers behind it. So sometimes it would be, hey, we did an MVP of this and it gave us a 5% lift. Now we're going to do this in every country. So the hard work was already done. Now it's just collecting more benefits. But I did it one country only so I could have that number. Even though it might take a little longer, I can be sure that it actually has an impact before I go and expand. And in moments that I stopped doing this, it actually came back to bite me to say, well, you haven't really tested a lot of this. Well, you know, we tested this for months, but you forgot about the test we did 6 months ago. I'd rather do it again and keep showing the impact in numbers. And but the higher you go, the simpler you have to be on these conversations, because they don't live in your world like you don't live, you know, we live in the SEO bubble. We sometimes get just very close to us on PPC and PMax, and why you're showing these ads on these pages. And it's like, well, we don't have control anymore. And, you know, we sometimes it's not really too far from us, but it already sounds like a completely different world. So looking at a C-level or even like a director that has to manage a lot of different products, they don't have the same time and excitement to go as deep as you into all of those. So you need to simplify to get the language that they actually care.
So, you know, obviously the search engines that we're playing around with now are not the same as when we started 13 years ago, you know, 17 years for me. And, you know, everybody's excited about the next big thing. For Indeed, what has been the biggest concern or opportunity that you're seeing with the change in search technology?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I don't really have a proper answer yet. I'm still personally trying to understand where, you know, how things are going to change. They are changing. I think in general, traffic will decrease. It is a big change for us, right? We are used to blue links, and we drive people from keywords to pages. So we know how the demand, how big, more or less how big a demand is into different things. Sure, keywords are not perfect. Search volume is not perfect, but it helps you give you a trend or estimate a ballpark things. And now we're not going to have a lot of that, right? People will search in a lot of different ways with longer searches, and they were still going to come to you. I think if you look at a company like Indeed, you're not going to apply for jobs from ChatGPT or Perplexity. So I think our position is still very much needed. But how we're going to acquire people, I think it's going to be very different how it was until now. Like how people are using ChatGPT in different ways to get information about jobs. You know, it is starting to look different. You know, we are present, we are tracking in different ways our presence there. But I don't think anyone has the formula to say, we will rank more, we rank better doing this thing or doing that thing. Everyone is trying to discover that right now.
Yeah, I think it is. It's hard because we've had a bit of a crutch. It's a blessing and a curse of being reported these search volume numbers And yeah, there's nothing like that in ChatGPT and Perplexity and Claude and any of these models that are now getting connected, because Siri just got connected to ChatGPT on newer model phones. And so I can very much imagine more of that top funnel stuff actually might benefit a company like Indeed, because some of those SERP results for, you know, like if they're saying they have multiple criteria for their job, I am in this area, I need this salary with these benefits and these exclusions, is something that on traditional search results, like there's only so much that's in the blue clickable link. There's only that shows up in the meta description area. And so Google would either show an individual listing or a category listing, and LLMs, you know, while they eat a bit more of the sandwich up higher, if they're ultimately citing, you know, that link that has that job listing that that person actually wants, that seems, you know, like that seems advantageous ultimately. But you're right that there is there's more of a black box effect around LLMs and what are the real ways to influence them in terms of, you know, surfacing more, like aside from just being big and having more stuff, but like having that tie in to the Bing index is a huge benefit, because I would imagine for Indeed, because you've got the Index Now plugin capability where you're able to tell that index, hey, this exists now, versus Google's spray and pray, like, hey, you can upload a sitemap and hope we'll crawl it and might index. I think that makes me a little bit happy that these third-party tools are getting more out of competitors to Google, because it kind of is forcing Google to catch up and try something different and give a little bit more. What are your thoughts in that area?
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of the quality of traffic that Indeed and I think any other website will get. Like, you're going to lose a lot of the top of funnel. But once people reach your website, it's such a much bigger effort to do a click after you did some search, you know, AI search, after you found some answers and you still went to click through on the to a source. I think your desire to, or you're much ready to perform an action than before. It is a very interesting world. I've been using, like everyone is using, and I booked a holiday through ChatGPT recently. Now I can now I can say we are going to Malaga in Spain, and awesome. I realized my criteria was I could search that on Google or traditional search. Mm-hmm. And I did, and it took me so many steps, but I couldn't really find what I wanted. I wanted a place that it would take me around 2 hours to fly and had a direct flight from Dublin.
Yeah.
And to go in March when a place with a rainfall lower than Dublin, because the weather here is miserable in the first quarter of the year. And I was like through different websites and looking, comparing the rainfall in this city and some airlines fly directly to this place and some others fly from another place. So it was very hard even to filter what are all the airlines that fly directly from Dublin in less than 2 hours. Like I would have given traffic numbers to, I don't know, 20 different pages or 10 different websites. All of that was maybe two or three interactions with ChatGPT. And I booked in the end. I booked a holiday. I already knew the airline, so I went directly to their website. So all of this happened in a search environment. The credit was just direct. So attribution, I think, is going to be more difficult on that as well. Like, it doesn't mean you're going to click through a link Direct might look bigger, even though the there was a searching element that drove you to execute the direct search.
Attribution. The days of I mean, I still long for those ancient days where in Google Analytics you could see what was the keyword query they actually searched for. Those days are long, long gone, relic of a
Those days are
bygone
long.
age. But we've lived in a half medium world of getting part of the answer and told that Google Search Console is telling you everything when it really obscures for most brands at least 50% of the actual details of the clicks. Large entities might get as much as 70%, but it's still heavily sampled. So kind of learning how to live in a less attributable world. I think Rand Fishkin has talked a lot about this. He did a fantastic piece and pointed out you go to TikTok and there is no function to click. They do not create TikTok. They want you to passively watch, maybe swipe, but never click. And so the behavior, like the there, he had an example brand of somebody who was very popular in TikTok that he worked with, and he showed that the branded Google queries after the fact were a reflection not of their organic reach, but of their social media reach, because their site actually didn't rank for, like vacation queries. It was all about that particular person or persona. And so I think we as SEOs have to broaden our view of impact and influence that we can have. And it's kind of scary to not be able to as strongly attribute certain things to particular projects. But I think we have to try to start to diversify and work with other channels more closely to try to bridge the gap of the content that we're creating, and maybe think about the search engines within those social media sites, or treat social media sites as other websites. There has to be a stepping back from this Google-centric universe that we've put ourselves into, because it's not going to be the only game. And even that game, more and more data is hidden from us, and the ways that we influence or impact that need to be bigger.
I think your point on that. I've seen a few people, a couple of talks in Brighton over the last few years of people saying exactly that. Like, we generated a demand for a product through TikTok, and Google is cashing in because people are going to Google to look for how do they buy product A or product B. And I've even seen cases, I think Ryzen 7 does this a lot, to generate a demand of something through TikTok or see there is a demand already happening for this. Let's get a page on our client's website that matches that need. There
That
was
was
some case, like some big brands, big retail brands did a commercial where they were showcasing a piano, and then they saw there was an increase in sales for a piano. The company doesn't sell in pianos. So, like, it was a specialized e-commerce was cashing in and didn't even know why there was such a big demand out of nothing that more people wanted to buy pianos. Like, well, because this Christmas commercial is just talking about pianos every day for a month, and more people are thinking, oh, this is something I want to have at home. So it's interesting to open up and say, okay, this can happen from so many channels that influence search. And if we are not involved with all of these, like you said, and we are just expecting that the demand is going to happen from search, it's not anymore. Like, the demand is being driven from so many different places, and they can drive so much. No, you have the same outfit trend. There are thousands of people repeating the same thing. Or if there's a new way to cook something, there's hundreds of chef blogs or chef TikTokers that are doing the same one. So the demand might happen in search in some way, or might just happen completely offline. So our attribution is fucked. but we need to be part of this one way or another to understand why it's happening and how we can be part of it.
I think there was a panel at I think it was Moz in Seattle, and they paid a lot of money to do an influencer campaign to promote pink pants for this particular brand. The unfortunate thing is they didn't check in with the SEO first, because if they had before they did their expensive contract, it was like a $100,000 campaign. And the problem was that they actually didn't have enough pink pants in stock in the e-commerce store. They had like 10 pairs. And so they sold out, and so they got delisted off of that result for pink pants, which was suddenly hot. And they basically spent $100,000 promoting pink pants that they didn't have. And so this other brand made a bunch of money off of their influencer campaign because the two campaigns, the two efforts weren't synced up. The person managing the e-commerce and the store was totally unaware of this massive expense to promote this specific thing. And because of the way search works, you know, showing up with out of stock on a hot keyword, you're out, you know,
you're out. Yeah.
You're dead in the water. So, there's definitely a move for big brands to understand and have people who can work cross channel.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, and this is like, this is not even SEO, right? This is just having the business sense. I think, I mean, SEO should be informed as well. So you create a page that is optimized for that search.
Yeah.
And maybe you start building that page a while before.
Yeah.
Maybe you find ways to get links to this page to make sure it's ranking high, so you get to cash in on this demand that you're about to create.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like if you don't need it, it's even worse if you didn't rank at all for that product to begin with. You're just going to send it to, you know, and hope that they find the right pair of pink pants, you know. So it's best to try to figure out, you know, we do like the cross-lit bra and that ranks number one, then take that to the influencer and be like, okay, this is a page and a product that we already rank well for. Or if you have it the opposite problem, like we're overstocked on these and we need to get rid of them, how can we make this page rank so then we can put the influencer to get the volume of demand? It's kind of a different game and a different system, a different way of looking at the value of SEO as contributive to a larger search or a larger digital marketing campaign or even, you know, offline. You know, like there's a lot of things that we miss as SEOs where we almost don't interact with the real world at sometimes. We're so focused on...
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So focused on our keyword tools that we forget to actually interview our users at any point. What, if any, and I might be calling you out on this, like, have you had a chance to, like, create any feedback loops or talk to, like, your users or talk to job searchers or done things to kind of pick up on those additional signals to make enhancements or improvements to your enterprise efforts?
Yes. One of the product that I work for now is a career guide, and there's a feedback section that job seekers do go through the effort, surprisingly, to leave comments. Like, these are not public comments, but they just can give a feedback if they like the article or not, and they can actually say what is good and what is wrong about them. And we do spend time looking at those and say, oh, you know, this actually doesn't explain well, or, you know, there was a formula was wrong in a certain place and things like that. So we do that. And I've worked with UX teams that were interviewing job seekers to gather feedback on what they liked about something. And sometimes it wasn't even something that was built. It was just, you know, a bit more than a Figma file, but they could go through the steps of something and we would think, oh, this is a great feature. We're going to do this for SEO. It's going to have a great impact. And people were like, why is this in here?
Yeah.
And then you know, once you need to balance the efforts and say, this has to be good for SEO, but also has to be good for job seekers, then a few things are just like scrapped completely, because maybe they would be good for SEO, but you put front and center something that people don't like. You know, you have a lot of other minds that are not SEOs that are part of the product that will say, you know, if this is job seekers are confused about this, there's no SEO reason alone that is going to put this in this place.
No, that's true. There are pieces where, you know, to certain degrees, like some things SEOs do, we get stuck in our mentality of like, we need to do this to rank and create it this way. But from a user UX workflow perspective, sometimes it is a competing interest to try to pull them off. Thanks to Google, there are certain things that we have to do that aren't as great. I mean, it would be great. I know that a lot of my salon clients would love it if websites didn't have to have any text on them, if they could just be pretty pictures of salons and they could rank really well. So I know all of my beauty salons and apothecaries, they just want to show pretty pictures and have people understand what their branding is without actually using any words. So sometimes you have to make a sacrifice on the expectation side, the branding side. You know, yeah, you got to say what you do, and you can try to balance that a little bit. But ultimately, most searches still continuing to be and will almost always be very heavily word reliant.
It's an interesting world. I was last week. I was looking to hotels. And I was having the experience from the other side, and it was like, so all this text in here, all I want to know is what times the gym at this hotel are open, and if they're open on the weekend, because I'm going to be there on the weekend. And they explained a lot of other things, but I couldn't find the basic information, but there were walls of text all over, and you could see, you know, the linked anchors, and it's like, yeah, no, someone has been SEOing this website. Eventually, I found what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But you need, I guess you always need to find that balance, right? You know, you can't just have pretty pictures, but you can't have a block of text on top of your products, because that's not what people went there for. So you need to find how can you balance all of those things to rank, and once people reach that page, they actually have a good experience and they complete the action you were hoping for.
Yeah, I was talking with Shannon Lavinia on another interview yesterday, and she was talking, it made me realize that we need to also think about like the follow through, because while our focus has been on getting non-branded search, and increasing that in SEO. Like, we look at those volumes and we try to get those people. But really, it's so much more expensive to do that than to capture people and to provide a return value and make it somewhere where people come back to and read again. And so, like, the search experience of what it is that you create to rank needs to be in the style that's repeatable and reusable, and set an expectation that after they leave that page, after they submit the form, and it ties into the business model work too as well, of like, what is the value proposition of this brand? Is Indeed the IT, you know, they're the technical job site, or are they the heart, the everyman's job site? Are they the most thorough listings, or are they the most listings? Like, trying to communicate what is the tone, like what is the value that you're trying to give to your users, and seeing if once they go on to that next step, they convert, that you don't lose them, you know, that you have something for them to come back to, because that what the taste that's left in their mouth afterwards, it's not just ranking and getting them to the page and possibly doing something. It's also, were they satisfied, and like, will they come back, or how, if they need it again, will they come back to you, because that's the satisfying experience that you're trying to build. I think going a little deeper into like the web design aspect of the search engine optimization process should consider the brand, the quality, the duration, the impression that the site leaves, and not just leave it at the doorstep of, oh, I increased rankings. Oh, I increased traffic. Oh, I increased conversions. It needs to go a little bit further. Like, it should reflect in the reviews that you get. It should reflect in the input you get, and then looking at those stats of return users, of people coming back again and again to find more information. At least that's my theory.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's where it's becoming a hot topic in SEO, branding, right? Like, people are more interested in how brands are connecting, and Google seems to be favoring bigger brands now. And there's some reasoning to it. I was even listening, I think it was Garrett on your podcast,
yeah,
talking about that, and it kind of makes sense. Or at least you can understand why Google would follow that direction, that if people are satisfied with brands, mm-hmm. with certain brands, would it make sense to serve more of that than just any quote-unquote random website.
Yeah.
So yeah, if like the whole experience is positive, you're going to see that reflected on reviews. And I would guess that reviews, like the scores that you get and the comments that you get, also help your ranking on local SEO. So mm-hmm. it's like, in a perfect world, all of those things to the line. Sure, not all comments are real, not all scores are real. You have, you know, negative SEO and all of that. But on paper, those things do work.
Yeah. So kind of wrapping things up, I'd like to ask if there's like a surprising action item that had like a really good benefit that you recommend somebody do, or if there's a process you've adopted recently that you think that people, like, after they listen to this, they should do immediately. So the most actionable, it can be a strategy, it can be a tactic, or just a mindset.
Yeah. There's one thing that I've been doing, I think, over the last 6 months, and I even gave a talk in Italy about this, is I learned that I can ask ChatGPT to write code, to write Python code that I can run on Google Colab. And mm-hmm. I just thought this was amazing. It's like little programs you can do for different things. It's maybe like 2 or 3 prompts, and I get something that that is usable. So yeah. Like one example that I had to do, I was doing some analysis on pages to see they were losing traffic, and I wanted to see when they started losing traffic, and I would go back to Ahrefs or SEMrush to see what rankings I had at that time and what rankings I have now. But every page lost or gained traffic in a different month. So I wrote a little, I did a little prompt that gave me a code saying, I was asking for, I'm going to upload a sheet to give me the best and the worst month that this page had over the last 3 years. I'm going to upload a spreadsheet with columns, URL, month, and sessions, something like that. And just export to me a file that shows the URL, the best month, how much traffic I had, and the worst month. So yeah. Then I could go manually and find those pages and see what happened. Mm-hmm. A lot of those, there were no ranking changes. So I could look back and say, oh, these are AI overviews, or there's some other SERP feature that is showing here. We didn't lose any rankings. Google just cluttered the space more and people are not clicking through. Mm-hmm. Nobody's winning.
Yeah.
But the idea is more, I mean, you don't need to use my example. You know, people have different issues and different things they can do. But anything that is just a boring task that you're checking things, you can ask ChatGPT to run a program for you. And I can't upload any indeed information straight on ChatGPT. So this was my way to move from one place to another. I write the code. I run that on Google Colab. I don't know how to code pretty much anything. So yeah. I am, you know, the code works the way it comes from ChatGPT to Google Colab. I click on run. just ask me to upload the sheet and give me the results. And I've
Yeah.
done a ton of little programs like this since I started. So if you have a boring task to do, maybe ChatGPT and Google Colab can do the boring part for you.
That's I love it. It's brilliant because there's so much. The value of SEOs isn't decreasing. It's just changing. It's not that we were truly valuable because we sat and read CSV files and then turned them into Google Sheets so that we could actually find and filter the stuff. That took hours, and it was stupid that all of these SEO tools always only ever exported CSV files when we just wanted Google Sheets, because then it was functional and shareable and filterable. And so, definitely have that feeling of possibility, like leveraging the possibility of LLM and AI-based tools on the execution side. I love the idea of looking for micro programs for those little benefits too, because there's a lot about, like, oh, I put in this prompt and I create, this piece of content and then like layered on it. But I think for an SEO to think, oh, hey, there is a small repeatable task there where I'm, I want to know when I'm looking at Google Search Console, like what some of these specific changes were and what the true outliers and gains were in it. But if you can't do that by average rank, because that's like it's totally useless signal. So I think there could be little tools that you could develop very quickly. I'm going to turn around and do that right after this. I think I have one or two little tasks that might be GPT codable. So thank you very much. That's going to help me.
Oh, all
Where do you
right.
hang out
Keep me
on
posted.
social? Yeah, I'll ping you on Blue Sky. I think we were chatting there. Is there anywhere else people, if people want to chat with you, where do you hang out on socials and interact?
Yeah, I'm mostly on LinkedIn. I'm using Blue Sky a little bit, not as much as LinkedIn. Then on my website, gaspelogia.com, I sporadically write things in there. I hope sporadic is a word in English.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah, okay. Sometimes I just made up words from Portuguese, and then my wife speaks, she's also not an English-speaking native. But she speaks better than me, and she's like, "Yeah, this word doesn't exist. I know what you mean because we have a similar word in Romanian, but you just made up a word." So, but yeah, that's where you're gonna find me: LinkedIn, Blue Sky on my website, maybe in conferences in person. I think that's the best place to connect with people. I love going to Brighton SEO, the UK one, because then I just once or twice a year I see everyone that I know online and. People know you and you know them, and you're like, you just point at each other. It's like, I read something you wrote 3 months ago. I loved it. And you have this feeling of community where a lot of people admire each other. And I just come back home with such a positive energy. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
I find so
hopefully.
much more value in the hallways at conferences than the actual sessions. Like usually, like when I come back from a conference, like all maybe there's one session that really made a big difference, or like that said stuff that I didn't know. But those conversations in the hallway, getting drinks at the bar after and commiserating over HCU destroying all of your sites and learning something new from somebody else comes from those conversations. Or you share links, get backlinks from some other site because you talk to the SEO. Like, no way that you would have gotten a link from that site any other way than actually from a human.
Yeah. I think for me, it's half and half. I love the conversations. I love meeting people for dinner and having drinks after. You connect with people that you already admire, and you make that relation stronger. I do go to a lot of sessions, and I'm not like if I look at my phone for 2 minutes, I lose the train of thought. But if there's a couple of sessions that are like, oh, there's something good here, and I go and I watch the recording later, or I get the slides. So I still try to get something out of it. One of the best talks that I saw recently was Lazarina Stoy talking about machine learning for SEO, and I didn't grasp the whole thing during the talk, so I watched the recording later, and I read some of her stuff, but I wouldn't know anything about it if I wasn't sitting in the room for those 20 minutes. So now I know, oh, this is a thing that I can do, and I go and explore myself. But if she wasn't there speaking, even though I didn't watch the whole thing with my mind there, I would still be a few steps behind.
I'll definitely have to add that to the show notes. So much, thanks so much for your time, Gus.
No, my pleasure. And yeah, looking forward to listen to it later.